Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it.
I believe in people's lawful right to bear arms.
What difference at this point does it make? We want
the freedom. If you want to protect yourself, get a double barrel shotgun. Fire two blasts outside the house. This gun, you gotta come through us
and take it. One shot. From my cold, dead hands.
We're keeping our guns.
Welcome to 2AO Radio. Brian Crosswright in our nation's capital, along with me, Kevin Griffin in Northern Michigan. Good evening, Brian. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, Kevin. Thanks for a great week. And
yes,
glad to be here on the show.
Great week.
Absolutely. A lot of stuff
to
talk about.
Tell us some good news, Brian. What have you been up to?
Man, we have been busy roaming the halls of the Senate and the House here on Capitol Hill, talking about the Second Amendment, talking about this AR ban that the ATF has threatened us over. But yeah, as we all know today, it was overturned. So, or basically, they pulled back. So,
well, I don't think overturned is exactly what's going to happen. I think they left the door open a nudge for to be reintroduced, perhaps at a later date.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is that this is typical of the administration and their tactics. We've seen this over and over again with other agencies where they would actually test the waters. We've seen the FCC test the waters with their monitors. Now we're seeing the ATF test the waters with this AR ammo ban. They're going to come back with something.
You know, you say testing the waters, this immigration thing perhaps could be a test for another ban down the road, correct?
Absolutely.
I mean, maybe, perhaps a firearms ban.
Absolutely.
Anyway, it's easy to get off topic. I want to talk a little bit about this 223-556 ban. I got music on my mind. 2AO really put some pressure in the proper places. Am I mistaken?
Absolutely. Our organization we rallied our troops and we put out a lot of documentation to contact our Congress. A lot of our members did that. We went out, roamed the halls of Congress. And you know, Kevin, it was really odd. We didn't see anybody who was actually advocating on behalf of the Second Amendment in those halls.
When you say you didn't see anybody, are you talking referring to another three-letter advocacy group?
I don't want to name names on this. This is not what it's definitely not something I want to portray, but what I'm saying is I talked to a lot of people. We asked the question, you know, all the congressmen knew, you know, everybody knows about the issue. And when we asked, well, you know, who else do you have meetings with? You know, and they just kind of shook their heads like they were surprised too. And maybe it was something that other people don't have an interest in, but we had 2AO and we're representing our Second Amendment. We're out there walking those halls. We've had 17 meetings in the last week talking about this issue. So I know there was a lot of people taking credit for this. We saw other organizations saying that it was because of them, whatever. It's great. I think it's because we have a community of people, and people in the United States need to take credit for it. It's no organization. It's the people of the United States who fight for their Constitution. They call their congressmen, and we really want to thank them for that.
I heard over 80,000 written replies hit the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. 80,000 replies.
Absolutely.
That is a lot of mail.
Absolutely. It's crazy how much was out there.
I to be honest with you, I didn't think it had a chance. I thought this was going to just sail right through and we were going to be out of luck when it came to 223-556 ammo. In fact, I'll fess up, I did buy quite a bit of it over the last few weeks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was something with us. I mean, we were looking at our hunting rifles and things like that and wondering, are we going to have the same issue, Kevin? Is it going to be the same way?
It was a close call, and they claimed that it was going to make police officers safer, but police one survey showed that the police did not favor this, and there is not one incident where they could point to where they said a 223 round had penetrated a bulletproof vest or a bullet resistant body armor type apparel.
You know what was interesting was the fact that they would use the AR in a handgun, and you know what that was coming down to. It's the basic, the AR hand, we call the AR pistol, which is basically the same AR-15 without the stock. And that's what they're trying to ban. They're trying to do whatever it takes to ban that initiative that's been by AR manufacturers to be able to keep selling their product. They're wanting to ban that. They're wanting to ban SBRs. We're seeing a big push from people on Capitol Hill that are actually, it's coming from the administration, where they would like police officers and sheriffs to sign off on the right to have a SBR or whatever. So they're actually making sheriffs sign off on these things. And this is what the administration wants to do. They want to put more pressure on the sheriff's associations and the sheriffs to be able to do this. So it's a very interesting dichotomy here with how this administration wants to ban ammunition, because they can't ban these guns.
Right. You can't get the firearm off out of people's hands. Let's go after the ammo that feeds the firearm.
Absolutely.
The Sheriff's Association, you had just mentioned, they're no stranger to Second Amendment rights. In fact, they're friends of ours, correct?
Yeah. You know, we talked to some people who are in the Sheriff's Association, and it seems like they're advocating for the same thing. They're pushing the president to be able to withdraw from this bill that he's trying to do. So there's a lot of different organizations, not only the Sheriff's Association. I mean, we see the NRA doing things. We've seen other organizations that are pushing. And they are, you know, I think, I don't want to put down any organization, but I think a lot of people woke up with this issue. And this was a hot topic. And to see the ATF just back away was pretty awesome. But I have to say, we still don't have the fix for regulating the Second Amendment yet. We're still not out of the water.
Do you think we ever will?
Yeah, absolutely. 2AO has a huge initiative right now. We're one vote shy from a major policy that's going to be changed that's going to protect the Second Amendment. We're one vote
reciprocity?
Shy.
Reciprocity?
No, it's not reciprocity.
No.
No, not at all. This has to do with the IRS, actually. We can't really talk too much about it right now, but we will be talking about it here in the next few weeks once we make the official press release.
Oh, you gave a little teaser there, huh? Good. Absolutely. Things to come. So keep listening. You know, if 80,000 people said, or if 80,000 people did indeed reply, and by the way, we did have a pre-filled document that you copy and paste and print or email, even though email probably does not get read or it doesn't carry the weight that a mailed letter does. That was on our website that Ace Luciano had crafted and put up there. And I'm sure thousands were downloaded off our website and sent in. And those of you who did that, thank you. Thank you very much. And like Brian just said, it is awesome that this did get pushed back, because had we given them this, given in, something would have been next. What do you think would have been next? The 308, the 270?
Well, they're going to go after anything that can pierce a body armor, which we know that 22 bullets can actually pierce a body armor. In certain,
I was going to say 9mm, 38, you know, and that's the thing is, this is what surprised me with the stop on this, is the ATF and the White House, the administration, they're relentless. I mean, the left, liberals, Democrats, when they have a prize in mind, they don't let up.
No, they know that they had a foothold.
They just don't.
It was a foothold in this policy. And what's sad is we have an administration that's pretty strong. We have a Congress, I have to admit, pretty weak. Boehner And we'll probably talk more about that, but you see when things Boehner folding to the administration, you're seeing Mitch McConnell just vote totally against his own party. And you're seeing McCain, you're seeing Lindsey Graham come out with the most stupidest statements and showing their weakness. And you sit back and you think, man, the Republican leadership has no, I hate to say it, but they have no strength in this Congress.
No backbone. Right. I shiver every time I hear Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham or even John Boehner speak at this point, because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, I was impressed, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit later, given your Middle East expertise and knowledge, with the Netanyahu speech. And during the, what's at the Supreme Court right now? It has something to do with the health care in the states, and the lawyer arguing for our side, the Solicitor General, said the judges said something about Congress, and he made a backhanded comment like, this Congress? Like he was surprised that this Congress was going to actually do something.
Right. Absolutely. I think you're seeing stuff. I mean, we're hearing a lot of rumbling in the Republican Party between the conservative movement, or what they call the Tea Party movement, and the establishment Republican Party. We're seeing a lot of infighting, a lot of, I think Boehner came out and said that this letter that was drafted and spearheaded by from Arkansas, I forget the senator's name, Senator
Tom Cotton.
Tom Cotton. We actually met with them a week ago. And so they actually spearheaded a letter to about Iran. This Iran deal, right? So it was very interesting. And then you heard Boehner come out and say, you know, this is a disgrace to the presidency. And this is just going to, you know, this is not, we're not in favor of this. And I'm sorry, but Boehner needs to go. I mean, when is the Republican Party going to realize they need to get him out of the Speaker of the House? And then, but the threats were there. You heard about that, right, Kevin?
Yes, I have. There was an article circulating last week, and I'm trying to look it up right now to give credit where credit is due, about getting Boehner out of office. And Senator Tom Cotton, your thoughts on him? I mean, you're right there in D.C. You're in the buzz. I mean, what do you think of the young man? I mean, he is young compared to me, at least.
And he's a veteran, right?
I believe a Army captain, West Point grad.
West Point grad.
I might be not doing him enough justice. He might have risen higher than that.
Yeah, I believe he's a veteran of our wars. And, I mean, the guy's got a lot of experience with foreign policy. You know, I really think he understands the true threat. And I think when you look at his ability and what he's been through, his history, and then you look at the people who are negotiating this deal with Iran. So let's just name them. John Kerry. What did John Kerry do? Big-time deserter, right?
He ran away and got shot in the rear end.
Got away and then threw his medals.
Remember? Yes, right back at the White House.
Threw his medals back at the White House. So that's
his. And you know what else John Kerry did?
Yeah, what else?
He married up.
He did, didn't he?
I'm sorry, I couldn't help that one.
It's true. Definitely. And I mean, so think about that. You got him, and then you got, that's our State Department. Then you got President Obama. Now, last time I heard, President Obama's never picked up a gun, never fought in a war, never signed up for the military.
He's never had a job.
He's only been a community organizer. So, you know, this is what we have as our negotiating team. And then they're going to actually criticize Tom Cotton, a guy who has experience in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he understands foreign policy. He's been there. He's done it. He knows the enemy. And they're going to ignore his motivation to say that we shouldn't be negotiating with Iran. Blows my mind.
I don't think they're actually negotiating with Iran. I haven't read the letter. I don't know if it's out there. I think the letter was more of a statement sent over saying this is what we're going to do. Is that correct?
Exactly. I think it's more of a proposal than a negotiation, but the president's always going to put his spin on it. And when you see Netanyahu come here and warn about these atrocities and things that Iran has threatened to do, not even 2-3 weeks ago, we've seen a tweeter from the Ayatollah who's saying that that Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth. We're going to sit back and say, well, you know, that's just, you know, political talk. That's bull crap. You know, this is really what's going on in our country, and we're taking a blind eye to this radical threat from Iran and ISIS. They're not connected, so I want to make sure we understand that. ISIS is not Iran, and actually you're going to see a major war between ISIS and Iran, which is going to be pretty brutal if they get their nuclear weapons.
Well, and Netanyahu had said, the enemy of my enemy is not my friend. And, you know, that's an old saying that the enemy of my enemy is automatically my friend or my ally. But in this case, no, not so much. Since we brought up the Netanyahu situation, and you're pretty sharp when it comes to that region, what did you think of his speech?
Oh, he was an amazing speech. I watched it, and I have to say that the way he presented himself was very presidential. It was very much of a leader. It was something that it brought back memories of seeing King Abdullah of Jordan and how he spoke after his Jordanian pilot was burned in a cage. You're starting to see those type of people stand up against ISIS and stand up against the threats in the Middle East and talk real. But then you see our president, he doesn't even want to talk to the media. He doesn't even have a voice anymore. He doesn't even care. And all he wants to do is set his own agenda above the American public.
Well, he's, you know, that the Netanyahu speech to me was what a true leader does or can do or will do. And it was very moving, very touching. The first 5 or 6 minutes, I was a little shocked, and he totally took a tone in a different direction. Once he got warmed up, it sounded pretty much like an Obama campaign speech. Yeah. But the message he conveyed, the way he conveyed it, it was very, very good speech. And I, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know that was he's the only one aside from Winston Churchill to address both of our houses of, you know, Congress and Senate.
That's right.
You know, your experience over there, what do you think? I mean, do you dare even, what's Israeli's future? How do you see the U.S. and Israeli playing together in the future?
I think the Israeli-U.S. relations is going to be back on track after we get rid of Obama.
Do you think the speech, Benjamin Netanyahu's speech, helped Israeli-United States relations?
I think you can't really judge it from that perspective. You got to judge it about what did the president do when he basically used profanity about Netanyahu, did this with an open mic. You've seen this over and over again where the administrative officials in this administration has criticized this leader. They have a bone to pick with them. So I don't think our relations with Israel is going to be anywhere fixed until after Obama's out of the administration.
Did you see his reply? He was sitting in the Oval Office on a chair, not standing up, with his forearms across his lap / knees, his tie tangling down, and he said he didn't watch it. He had read the transcript, and it was, you know, the same old nothing new, nothing to see here type rhetoric. Yeah. You know, he didn't even give it the dignity to basically recognize it. And which was disappointing. One thing, you know, and I asked you about U.S.-Israeli relations. I'm sorry, I misspoke in my question there. U.S.-Israeli relationship from the United States citizen standpoint and support, I think, is going to be much stronger moving forward after his speech.
Right. I think we're going to, you know, I think you have Congress who supports it, but I don't think this administration ever will rally behind Israel, to be honest with you.
Yeah, what's the beef, by the way?
Has to do with Islam. I mean, it totally has everything to do with Islam. And I'm not saying that Israel's perfect, by no means. I lived over there in the region. I lived in an Arab country, and I've seen the problems that Israel has, and I've seen the other side of the picture. But I think that when you look at it, this administration is pro-Islamic, and they feel like the reason the radical Islam is so rampant in the Middle East is because it's all America's fault, and it's there for us to start apologizing about. And I think that's the president's stand.
Well, there was the apology tour. Israel is a pro Second Amendment type country or state, if I remember correctly from what I've seen, read, heard. Well, and you've been over there. They're allowed to defend and protect themselves.
Yeah, I mean, sure, they have that. I mean, most of the people are in the military, so they're issued weapons. So it's a common practice over there. There has been, and I'll go ahead and tell you the truth, I've seen, actually seen reports on it, and it's very much in the public domain, but where you see settlers shooting Palestinian kids with their AR-15s that were issued by the government, which is not right, to be honest with you. So there's, like I said, there's both sides of every story.
Right.
They never talk about the Palestinian Christians who are persecuted every day by the Israeli government. There's a lot of stuff that goes on. I'd be honest with you, you go to Israel and you walk in certain communities, and if you're not covered, you're going to get in a lot of trouble. They will come out and fight you and throw you out of their communities. And this is very common over there. We don't talk about that part of it. They're trying to make a radical Israeli state or a radical Jewish state. There's a big movement for that. You know, there should never be a Jewish state. That's the problem. It should be a socialist state, but it should be a state that allows for freedom. And that's something that people need to be really talking about. They should be talking about that instead of, just constantly criticizing both sides. I mean, they should be talking about freedom over there for religion instead of having it one-sided. We don't want an exclusive Muslim state. We don't want to see ISIS. So why should we see an extremist Jewish state? So those are things that need to be talked about. And I think you don't hear that often about that side of it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Where I was going with drawing the conclusion of the Second Amendment there with Israel was that, they support their soldiers, kind of unlike, remember we had Michael Stevenson on not too long ago talking about what happens with our soldiers and how the Israelis are treated in comparison to ours after they come home. Ours are labeled extremist, and theirs are supported and, able to protect and defend themselves. What, next, I know the election is coming soon, and a lot of people consider that an election speech for Netanyahu.
Yeah, I mean, he's down in the polls. And that's the thing. Yes. People need to realize that the people in Israel are pretty liberal. I mean, it's a very liberal state over there. And it's only a matter of time where you're going to get a very liberal person to take over as prime minister. And then when that happens, you're going to see a lot of changes. We'll see what happens, but it's a wake up call for the Middle East. I mean, they still got to stay strong defensively. And I think they always have that, but, we're seeing a big political change in that country.
The winds of change are upon them. Interesting. Yeah, good stuff. It was a great speech. Like to see more of our politicians.
I'd like to see him. I hope he wins the election, and we wish him all the best. Kevin, there's another issue. We're talking about all this stuff going on with the Secretary of State, but let's talk about the previous Secretary of State. Hillary Clinton came out with a big bombshell about her emails, being able to use private emails for her job as Secretary of State. What's your thoughts on that?
I have a lot. I'm not happy. There are two sets of rules. There are the rules for everyone else, and then there are the rules for Hillary and Bill Clinton. And it's very frustrating to see. I watched the presser yesterday. First of all, she hid for, 7, 8, 9 days? And she didn't even look at anybody. Could you tell? Did you watch any of it? Did you see it?
Absolutely. That was the same thing everybody's saying. She wouldn't even look at the reporters. She wouldn't even look at the cameras. She kept on, you could tell she was lying through her teeth. And
what's disappointing is she thinks we're fools.
That Clinton's always felt that way. They felt like they were always above the fray. But man, what a moron. She's talked about her and Bill used that server as the presidential server for the president. And they actually got quotes from Bill Clinton saying he only sent 2 emails during his time at the White House.
He's only sent 2 emails in his entire life.
Him and Lindsey Graham should marry up and go to a local community college and learn how to use IT computers or how to use emails.
Oh my. Well, he's very Twitter savvy though. In the Twitter sphere, a number of reporters have been quick to jump to.
Yeah, he's big on Match.com and eHarmony and Christian Mingle as well, I think.
Yeah, all the dating sites. Yeah, could you imagine seeing Bubba on a dating site? Well, not my dating sites, but yeah. What was terrible about this is she, on February 24th, she admitted to having an iPhone and a BlackBerry.
Oh, she had, and also an iPad and an iPad mini.
Yes, and an iPad and an iPad mini. Okay. Yeah. Why, first of all, oh, wow, this is just so disappointing. I knew we were going to talk about this tonight, but it's just frustrating. They went out of their way to set up a private server in their home, 60,000. Now, Brian, you're a busy guy. You think you get 60,000 emails over 4 years?
60,000.
30,000 of them personal?
I don't know, man. I think they get more than that.
You do?
I don't know the numbers, to be honest with you. You caught me off guard on that question.
Oh, I didn't mean to, but you know, a lot of people are going to actually measure. You know, you can do the math over a month. You can count. Okay, so 60,000 emails over 4 years, 30,000 of them were personal. And it was easier to have everything go to one account. Now, when you average, work for Uncle Sam.
Is it average about 18 to 20,000 emails a year? If you get 100 emails a day or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. I'm just shooting that out. But I mean, actually, that comes out to 36,000. I don't know, man. That's a hard one. I get so much junk mail these days.
Well, that's, you know, another thing. But they had to go to tremendous expense to set this up. I mean, way out of the way when she could have just clicked, you know, or had an IT person for the government set her up.
But what was interesting, Kevin, you forgot one thing, though. She had that server. It was secured next to the big box of silverware that came from the White House. So it was completely safe. It was good. It was safe.
Yeah. Okay. And nobody, you know, the story broke. You know, somehow it got compromised. And somehow thousands of emails are missing. And somehow she deems what is private and what is not. Those emails are our property.
Wait, she said that it's never been breached. That it was never, ever been breached or, you know, hacked into.
How does she know that?
She said that. She said in her press conference, she said, I deleted all my personal emails from it. Because I felt like that was not the public's business. And she said, this server is not your business and you're not going to get access to it. So it's going to be interesting what Trey Gowdy does.
Yes, I know. I remember her saying that. But the minute she received a U.S. government email on that, this is my opinion. The minute she received one, that was no longer private. That was no longer her private property.
That's right.
And absolutely. Confidential, classified, top secret documents. You know, those went by email. You worked for Uncle Sam. You communicated. You worked for Uncle Sam in the email age.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You were on a different network. I mean, it was totally different network. There was so much security in that. I mean, I don't even understand how they can do this. How could she even defend herself? This was amazing.
And how can the White House claim that, once again, he heard about it on the news just like everybody else?
He backed that one down.
Like everybody else.
He's backing away from that statement. And then he said, yeah, I knew that she had a personal email address, but I didn't know. And he's just, they making up. Josh Earnest. I don't understand how that guy can actually get up there and defend the president day after day.
Every day.
I mean, seriously, he's got to be on some good meds because sit there and tell those stories over and over again and having to backtrack is probably the worst job in the government.
Very stressful job. Absolutely. Very, very stressful. Yes, I couldn't do it. Could you?
No, not at all. It's crazy. So what do you think about Hillary's chances? Is she going to run?
I was just going to say, what do you think the effect is in the long term on Hillary Clinton? Yeah, I think she comes out of this unscathed.
I don't think so. I think she's going to get hit hard, and I think she's done. I think you're going to see Democrats rise up, and they're going to put another person in her place, and that's where it's going to go.
And that person will be Elizabeth Warren?
Probably so.
You think so?
Yep.
Support me or you're a sexist.
All right, we're going on to a commercial break, Kevin. You're listening to 2AO Radio on FTRradio.com.
Who is looking out for the American small business owner who believes in the Constitution? When the government is targeting small business owners who may support the Second Amendment with programs like Project Choke Point and IRS targeting of conservative organizations. We are 2AO, the largest pro-Second Amendment business organization fighting for business owners who believe in our Constitution and our Second Amendment, who believe that this is our America and it's time to take a stand. Will you join us today at 2AO.org and help us protect our American culture?
Welcome back to 2AO Radio with Brian Crosswhite in Washington, D.C. I'm Kevin Griffin in Northern Michigan, and joining us on the phone, the newly minted author, Ace Luciano, also the writer of our document that we posted on our website to send to the BATF. Good evening, Ace. How are things in Wisconsin? Tell us a little bit about your book.
Well, the title of the book is Guns the Right Way, Introducing Kids to Firearm Safety and Shooting, and it is on its way. It's not quite released yet, so you get a little preview, but the long and the short of it is that for years, people looked at the literally thousands of kids that I had a hand in introducing to guns and shooting and hunting, and they said, wow, you've really got that down to a science. You should write a book. And finally, one person convinced me to do that. So it was a project long, many years in the, I guess, formation of, and about a year in the actual making, and we're down to the final review stages. It should be hitting the newsstands in just a couple of months.
Congratulations, Ace.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, one of the biggest things, I think one of the largest challenges we have in this country, and it relates to everything from the violent, murderous thugs that you see killing people in Chicago to the, you know, urban professionals that are, you know, wildly liberal Northeast that are just paranoid of anything that goes bang, all the way to the simple accidents where two kids come upon a gun and one of them gets shot. All of those issues can be solved by the right education. And believe it or not, years ago, we did that. Years ago, they used to teach gun safety in school, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But instead, the schools got taken over by something else.
Hey, Sam, I have a question for you. Was there any school shootings back in those days when we had gun safety?
Nope.
Never. There was never the case of that. There weren't kids bringing guns to school to shoot each other.
No,
but a lot of kids brought guns to school because a lot of them had shooting teams.
Well, yeah, and then a lot of them had to go deer hunting after school. I mean, when I was in high school, it was a common thing to have a deer rifle in your truck because we lived in Central Texas, and, you know, you had to go deer hunting after school.
Or you didn't eat that night, right?
Well, I would put it that way. I mean, but, you know, that was our sport. We enjoyed hunting and we carried our guns. Hey, we knew not to go take our guns out of our truck. We weren't stupid. We were, you know, our parents taught us well.
Now, if
you know, Brian, well, what I was just going to say is it's all about the weapon, and the weapon is not the gun. The weapon is located squarely between the ears of every member of the Homo sapiens species. Because nobody would blink if I had a hammer sitting on the back seat of my car.
No, not at all.
They wouldn't say anything. I used to carry a baseball bat back and forth to practice. I played baseball in high school. Do you think anybody said, oh my goodness, that dangerous weapon? what are you doing carrying that? Well, it's not a dangerous weapon. It's a baseball bat. I was going to practice, right?
Exactly.
But yet if I took it and bashed Tommy's head in with it, right, it becomes an entirely different thing.
Ace, you opened up something right there, and Brian, you did, that I want to bring up quickly and get your guys' thoughts on this. In Madison Heights, Michigan, yesterday, a person was open carrying a rifle near a high school. The public panicked, and I think they had over a dozen 911 calls. Shame on who? The people that called 911, the guy open carrying the rifle, or the police for keeping an eye on the guy being so close to school grounds? Your thoughts, Ace, first.
I would say, you know, I like to be altruistic and say they all share the blame. And here's why I say that. First of all, I'm just going to assume he was carrying some type of modern sporting rifle, as an AR platform rifle or other black gun, quote. Is that a fair assumption?
I'm sure.
Yes, it is. It's a fair assumption.
Okay. Sure, he was making a political statement, too.
Here's the thing. I'm all for taking a stance. I'm all for making a statement. I am all for operating within the boundaries of the law. But just because something is legal doesn't always mean it's the right thing to do.
Correct.
And I am, as you well know, a avid concealed carry participant. I carry regularly. I was unfortunately involved once in a concealed carry incident where without my concealed carry weapon, I might not live right now to talk to you. However, I think there's a big difference between me carrying concealed and me slinging an AR rifle. And I'm not saying that the gentleman does not have the constitutional right to do that. I guess my question is, just like in many things, just like it's legal to drink, but it's a bad example to get drunk in front of your children, right?
Yes, it is.
It's the same type of thing, you know. Even though it's legal, it doesn't really mean it's the great thing to do. Now, the other thing is if you see a guy walking down the street with an AR-15, I think less of the blame goes to the people calling 911 because, quite frankly, most folks are uneducated when it comes to firearms and firearm safety, and certainly types of firearms. And now, thanks to the media, everybody looks at an AR-style weapon or a modern sporting rifle, as we in the industry call them. Everybody in the general public looks at that as something that is scary and they should be afraid of, and that is almost entirely because of the negative and pejorative perception that's been perpetrated by the media.
Well, allegedly he's with a group of activists known as the Hell's Saints Open Carry Group. Ryan, what do you think about that name? And what are your thoughts on this situation?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Ace on this. There's people that want to make political statements. I mean, I'm for one, you know, I believe in making political statements. My restaurant does open carry Wednesday. But to be able to walk around with an AR-15, I had a guy walking to my restaurant with an AR-15 once. I told him to go home. I said, go put that away. I said, you know, seriously. I said, carry your gun. Do whatever you want to do. Your handgun, that's fine. But, you know, an AR-15, that's a little much. Come on. I said, because first of all, you're a big target. And I always felt that open carry is always like, it's either going to be a political statement. It's no use for it. There's... From a standpoint, unless you're hunting, if you're hunting, it's a different story. But if you're just like walking down the street, if you're open carrying, you're the target. If someone's going to rob a bank and they walk in there and you're the one has a gun on the side, they're going to shoot you. The safest part is a person who is concealed carrying. That's the person who's going to protect. That's the person who's not going to draw attention to himself. So, it's the law. They have every right to do it. And shame on those people who called 911. They should know the law. And shame on the police if they didn't protect them. Because the guy has a right to do it based under the law. And we believe in that. But from a standpoint or just showing off, I'm not a big fan of those.
Well, I'm impressed you told somebody to go home that open carried an AR into your restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, it was like the first time we did open carry Wednesday, he showed up with an AR. I was like, seriously. And I knew the guy. I was like, go home, man. Seriously, go put the thing in your car and come back in and act like a normal person. I just
makes sense.
It didn't make any sense to me that, you know, you'd walk in with a rifle or a shotgun. That's not what we're here for. You know, at least with an open carry handgun, you can sit with it. What are you going to do with your AR-15? Prop it up against a wall, and what if it falls over? You know?
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, look at Texas, though. The only way you can open carry in the state of Texas, the Republic of Texas, is an open carry rifle.
Well, that's where we need to change the laws.
You bring up a good point, Kevin. That's why we're targeted demonstration and people making a statement are actually changing the law in Texas.
They're trying to, right. And they elected the correct governor, the proper governor, to make that almost probably a reality in his first term.
Right. And what a great thing. That's why I say, you know, it's judicious use and the judicious use of judgment is probably the most important thing we as firearm owners can do. And again, I would never deny someone. I would never say you shouldn't do that. But I might say, you know, there's probably a better way to make your statement than by carrying a gun by a school.
Exactly. You know?
So again, it's not always the message. Sometimes it's the messenger.
Yeah, I've seen this before, Kevin, and Ace, where people want to make a radical statement. We've seen Adam Cortez or whatever his name is walk into D.C. with a shotgun, and he loaded rounds into his shotgun standing on Independence Square. All right, you're going to make that move, you're going to get arrested. This guy who did it over in Wisconsin, he was walking by a school with an AR-15 over his shoulder. Okay, he was showing people, look, I'm right by a school. I'm carrying an AR-15. He was just there to make a political statement and show off. And people like that, they have no business being in the political arena or making political statements.
Well, this guy in Madison Heights, Michigan, yesterday lectured the officers, wouldn't answer any of their questions, just happened to have a cell phone with a video camera on it. And, you know, he made sure he was making a point. He actually, you know, that was premeditation, exactly what he did, just like you were saying, explaining the situation in D.C.
Absolutely. It was a planned political stunt. And being honest with you, political stunts don't carry over unless there's a real agenda behind it. There's nothing he's going to do. What's he going to do? Pass a law to do what? He already has his constitutional right. It's different in the District of Columbia. We cannot carry a gun in the District of Columbia. It's total blatancy right. of the Second Amendment. Now, it'd be different if we got 1,000 people together and said, hey, we're all going to conceal carry in the district on this day on non-federal property and show up there and get arrested. That's a different political statement. We are actually going against what the District of Columbia is saying is their law, which is unconstitutional. And with that, 1,000 people get put in jail. Then you're going to see everybody from the ACLU get involved, and then you're going to make a change. But what this guy is doing is not making a change. He's just showing off that he has the right to do something.
Right. That is an excellent point, Brian, that he's got the right to do it. There's nothing gained by him doing that except notoriety.
And it's all actually it does more hurt to the fight of the Second Amendment, to us who are on Capitol Hill fighting for these guys. It hurts us more that we have these type of people doing this type of stunt.
Well, and look at where we are. I mean, it's for every gain that we make, there's somebody trying to chip away from a different angle, a la the M885 green tip ammo ban, right? Well, we couldn't ban the guns. Well, you know what? We'll get rid of all the ammo. That was never about safety. That was never about law enforcement officer safety. That wasn't about anything except the administration thumbing their nose and going, oh yeah, you think you can beat me? Watch this.
Right.
And fortunately, as you guys talked about earlier, they have decided not to make a permanent, how do they phrase it? They have decided not to make a permanent plan and statement regarding it now. Well, that doesn't tell me it's gone. That just says, we're putting this aside until you're not paying attention. We're going to try and push it through. Well, number one. And number two, it tells me that they're lying, because in the 2015 ATF rule book, they had already eliminated the exemption of M885 ammo. This was not something that they just came up with as a result of law enforcement, you know, talking about their concerns for safety. And they said, oh, we better do this. This was a premeditated plan. When there are people out there that devious, that use that type of deviousness, there's no other word for it, to literally rob you of your constitutional rights, why would you give them an excuse?
Yeah, that's good.
Am I crazy?
I agree.
No, you're not. You're right on point there. That's, you know, a great way to put it. And you're looking for this to be reintroduced, perhaps 2016? Is that what you're saying?
I just think that here's what I know. I know that certain people in our government were brought up with, in their political careers, according to the Chicago style of politics. What the Chicago-style political machine operates on is pure thuggery and intimidation and power grabs and massive, massive control. And the way it works is you win small battles, but they will wear you down. It's how it always works.
Ace,
it's
you're absolutely right. I'll bring this point up. This is how they do it. You look at the guy who is fighting the Second Amendment the most. We're talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Look at his organization. Mm-hmm. What he did, he tried to go after federal government. He got, you know, Nancy Pelosi, his Democrat senators and House of Representatives, you know, Barbara Boxers of the world. He rallied them and tried to ban that AR-15, right? He got the president to say he's going to, you know, executive action. He tried to do that and he failed. And then what did he do next? He went after the governors and he went after House Bill 875 in the state of Georgia. He failed. What did he do next?
I-594 in the state of Washington and Nevada coming soon.
Absolutely. But what is he doing? Yeah. He stops and he realized, hey, I got to wear these guys down, but I can't get anywhere from the governors on up. So I'm going to go to their mayors. 923 mayors today have signed that petition saying that we are against illegal guns in our community, which is made up of a bunch of false lies that Mayor Bloomberg has come up with. And
it should be 100% of all mayors should be against illegal guns in their community.
Absolutely.
I was going to ask, are you against illegal guns in your community?
I am 100% against illegal guns in my community, my home, my state, and my country.
But look at what the petition says. What is illegal guns to them? They look at black guns as illegal guns. They think the AR-15 is an assault weapon. It's not the most popular modern sports rifle out there. I'll tell you right now, more people are switching to the AR platform hunting hogs and deer than ever before. It's going to be the next Remington 870 or 742 Woodmaster. You know
right.
what I mean?
You're right.
It's taking the place of, I've got my Remington up for sale. I don't want my 30-06 anymore. I want to get me a good AR with a 308 plat, you know, 308. That's what I'm looking for, because that is a very sustainable weapon. And that's what I'm looking at. And I know a lot of people doing the same thing. So they're going to ban them.
And they all have interchangeable parts.
Absolutely.
That's the beauty of it.
And where
you can get a part from any manufacturer if it's your gun.
And you can buy those today. And I was going to give a website, but I'm not going to do that.
Hey, we talk about the NAICS codes here very often, and I know both of you guys are very familiar with that. And there was an alleged statement made from Everytown, one of the women from Everytown on Fox News, about getting rid of AR-15s or the modern sporting rifle platform wouldn't have any economic effect on our economy.
She's absolutely right.
She's out of her mind.
No, but she's right. According to the NAICS codes, there is no impact on that industry. And the sad thing is, Kevin, we have talked to hundreds of AR manufacturers, and they all say the same thing. We have no way of tracking what's going on in this industry because we're not recognized in the NAICS codes. And that's just one part of it. I mean, we can go down a whole list of this industry which is invisible. And then we hear organizations like NSSF who come out and stand against the changing of the NAICS codes. We are shooting ourselves in the foot. When we have the president who's willing to push these bans on ammo, we have no economic indicators showing this, then it's going to be easy regulation to pass through.
Ace, your thoughts on the NAICS codes and the economic impact of the alleged AR platform ban?
Here's what I know. Having attended the prior 12
shot shows.
Prior 12 right. shot shows.
Yes.
And having seen the shot show transformed from a basically shooting and hunting show with a small corner for some law enforcement and tactical things to literally a show that has become almost half tactical and MSR and, you know, more practical shooting and defense shooting focus. I would say that they couldn't be further, that what they're saying couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, this industry is, it's alive and booming. And while people are saying that sales are down, well, yes, that's true, but they're still way up over what their historical norms have been. I mean, you just can't have 1 in 200% growth eternally, right?
Correct. Yes.
So we're still selling more ARs today per year than we were selling even 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
And we're certainly selling more than we were 10 or 15 years ago, right?
The problem
and
is,
how many of those, just if you just use the method of small business estimation, right? There are literally hundreds of companies out there that make several parts for an AR-15. That's all they make. There's a company here in Wisconsin called Badger Barrels. They make barrels for firearms, but one of their premier products is a custom barrel for an AR-15. Right? There are hundreds of companies like that. There are companies out there that make the plastics that go into the, you know, the handles and the stocks and the things like that, right? What about all of those companies? And what about all of the people that all of those companies together, the firearm manufacturers, the parts manufacturers, what about the impact that those industries have on other industries? Ruger is a pretty big company. The Freedom Group in Remington is a pretty big company. I'll bet they have a 401k there. Fair assessment?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Several of them.
So
probably.
All of those people pouring into that 401k dump money into investments out there, right? To the tune of millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars a year. I'll bet they have health insurance. How many doctors are employed by them going to the doctor? How many dentists take advantage of their dental plan?
How many restaurants?
Okay.
Yeah, how many gas stations?
How many restaurants? Right.
Yes.
People driving back and forth to work. How many people are affected by just the thousands of people that work at Freedom Group? And I would say millions. So to say that there's no effect is
ludicrous.
Both arrogant and ignorant.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very good point, Ace. Very good point. Hey, Wisconsin, you guys had some sweeping legislation that was signed into law. Was it yesterday or the day before?
It was Monday. I now have the right to work.
Yeah.
That's what I always had.
Now you have more rights for more work.
Right.
Yeah, what's the temperature on that? I know the organized labor came out and said that they don't support it, and it's going to make the drive wages down and make the workplace more dangerous. Are you not as safe at work today as you were this time last week?
What I have to tell you is that just like the Paper Reduction Act added 6 or 7 pages to every mortgage application, just like banning guns just creates more crime, just like the Affordable Care Act made healthcare something much the opposite of affordable. I will tell you that the right to work is something that does good things for an economy. It makes wages go up, and it actually, get this, increases union membership and participation in most states it's enacted.
Ace, you bring up a great idea. This is, you know, something that's really need to be thinking about as we talk about the new, you know, these presidential hopefuls that are coming up. What's your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Scott Walker's impressive. You know, I really didn't know a lot about him 10, 12 weeks ago, but now I'm paying attention. I can tell you that for sure. And you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Scott Walker has a strong position. I think you see Rick Perry has a strong position. I'll be honest with you, Jeb Bush, I'm shocked. He's not making any momentum. We saw him at CPAC. You know, people were booing him. It just doesn't come across as conservative. But seeing Scott Walker and what's going on in his state, wow, what a way to put his presidential campaign in motion.
His aspirations, absolutely. Yes, very well. I mean, he flip-flopped on something, and he did it way this time, not 12 months from now. He reversed his position on the immigration situation, illegal and amnesty situation, which I think is great.
Absolutely. So that, I'll be honest with you, that's my opinion on it. Listen, if you want to find Ace Luciano's book, you can find it at Amazon.com here in a couple of months. We really want to thank Ace for being on the show today. And thanks so much, Ace. So
I think Ace left us.
Absolutely. He's gone. So, hey, we're glad to have you back on the air, Kevin.
Great being here. Great being back.
Great show tonight. Remember, you can hear us at FTRradio.com every Wednesday night. This is Brian Crosswhite, Kevin Griffin.
Hey. Good night.
Good night, and God bless.